Hello there. Welcome into this edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast for a Thursday. This one, the 13th of August, 2020. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and absurdity. Oh, my. And speaking of absurd, can we just start with something absurd? Do you mind? I hope you don't mind, because here we go.
We know about this population, 18 through 24. They are stupid. That is why we put them in dormitories. And they have a resident assistant. They make really bad decisions.
That's her, Vice President candidate Kamala Harris. It's comma, like the punctuation. Don't make the mistake. It's Kamala Harris. On young people, 18 to 24. They're stupid. That's why we put them in dormitories with resident assistants, because they make terrible decisions. And yet, she appears at a town hall and says, we should have this conversation about getting 16-year-old people the right to vote. That's called politics, where you will say whatever you need to say to the people you need to, you need to sway. Say whatever you need to say to the people you need to sway. That's politics. And that is Kamala Harris. Hey, good morning. It's a good morning for me. It's a little after 8 o'clock in the morning on a Thursday for me, as I sit here at the microphone in the Daily Perspective Podcast studio. It's the corner of my basement. And we look at the issues of the day and how they will affect us. The real, the not so real, and the absurd. And today, I got a stack of stuff to talk about, and I will not get to all of it. I just won't. That's just how it is. And sadly, most of it is about, once again, Kamala Harris. It's Kamala, C-O-M-M-A-L-A-H. Kamala Harris. Please don't pronounce her name, because if you mispronounce her name, that is racism. And why would that be? Well, it's because
everything is racist.
Yes, everything is racist. And this is the reason they picked Kamala Harris, because she's female and her skin is a little bit darker than the average gal. They'd like to call her African American. She's not. She's Indian / Jamaican American. I want you to go look that up and see that I'm right, because she's not African-American. Oh, good grief. Anyway, that's part of the absurdity of today, is that when she needed to, she talked to people about how dumb people under a certain age were. 18 to 24, those people are dumb. They're stupid. We put them in dormitories with with assistants. Because they make terrible decisions. And yet, when she's talking to a young lady at a town hall who is obviously younger than that, she says, that's a conversation I think we should have. And that's how absurd things are today. Please be forewarned that already, we're watching the left step up and make Kamala Harris a champion. She is a hero. She has an unblemished track record. She is the perfect vice presidential candidate to work with Joe Biden. And more outlets are now saying that she is a moderate. Kamala Harris is anything but a moderate. And to think otherwise is absurd, because she's advocated for some of the most bizarre things. She's all in on the Green New Deal. She's all in on Medicare for all. She's all in on Bernie Sanders' agenda. She is anything but a moderate. It's absurd to think otherwise. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, so much for absurdity. Oh, man. What can you say? This is politics. This is the nature of politics. We're already being lied to. Bald-faced lies coming from the mainstream progressive press. We're already being lied to, coming from the Democrat campaign of Joe Biden. Yesterday, well, was it yesterday? It was the day before. He actually stepped out in a speech. It's all over the internet now, where he repeated the Charlottesville lie. What is the Charlottesville lie? The Charlottesville lie is that our president, Donald Trump, said that the Nazis and the extremists who were in Charlottesville and fought, which resulted in the death of a young lady, that those were all good people, that there were good people on both sides, and that these extremists, these idiots who just came for a fight, that there were good people on both sides, and that these were the good people, that the extremists, the Nazis, the white supremacists were good people. But in order to believe that, you have to edit what he actually said. It's been debunked and disproven again and again and again. The record is clear that President Trump did not say that racists, that right-wing extremists, that these people, he did not say they were good people. He actually said the opposite. But when people like Joe Biden step up, and those who are pushing him, when they step up to a microphone or talk with a reporter of any kind, they're not going to include all of his statement. Because he very clearly said, no, I'm not talking about the right-wing extremists. I'm not talking about the racists. I'm not talking about these white supremacists. I'm not talking about these people. I'm talking about the people who just had a difference of opinion about tearing a statue down, not the people who came for a fight. He was very clear, very clear. But in the absurdity that is politics, Joe Biden steps up to a podium, to a microphone, and says that Donald Trump said that that some of the people who were there, the people who represent the worst of our society, were good people. And it's a lie. I'm sure that Kamala Harris is going to be saying the same thing. She is going to be making claims. Wow, she's already making claims. She's already making accusations which cannot be proven and have not been proven and have not been legally backed up in any way, shape, or form. She's already making claims against the president about his personal life. And you can be assured that between now and Election Day, it's just going to be a soup of nastiness coming from the left. It's just going to be nasty. It's going to be awful. And just between you and I, just between us, you and me, we already know what is true and what is not. We already know that the left is lying to everyone about everything. We already know that the left is promising things they know they can't deliver because what they're promising is unconstitutional. Kamala Harris, for example, has said that if she was elected president, remember during the campaign, early on, she said that if she were elected president, that if after 100 days, the House of Representatives and the Senate had not done what was right by her standards, and that would be banning what she calls assault weapons, that she would, by executive action, do it herself, and that they would be confiscated. She can't do that because the ownership of such weapons is constitutionally protected. She calls them assault weapons. They're not assault weapons. They're standard rifles dressed up like they're going to a costume party as a soldier, basically. They're scary-looking weapons. She said that she could take those away from you if you own them. She can't, not legally. But she's willing to break the law, federal law, ignore the Constitution. Actually, she's willing to say she would, just for the sake of getting the votes, as we said earlier. The lies are already flying. So, as I was going to say, you and I, we know what's real and we know what's not real. We know what's true and we know what's not true. And we know they're lying to us, and we know that they're going to be flinging a lot of dirt between now and Election Day. So, it's probably not a bad idea just to get your information from your sources you know you can trust who aren't going to lie to you, and turn off the news, ignore the garbage on social media, and just go ahead and set yourself up and make yourself ready to cast your vote. And don't be swayed by anything that's coming our way between now and then. Because we've got a little time between now and then. And during that little amount of time, the left is going to throw as much at the wall as they can to see what will stick. And a lot of it is going to be extremely unpleasant. A lot of it is going to be, it's just going to be lies. Absolute lies. And they will parade it out as truth. Unquestionable truth. Just like they have every lie they've ever told. So between now and Election Day, just resign yourself to know what is true and to rest in that. And not be too bothered by the lies. Because the lies are going to come. They're just going to come. And there's not a thing you can do to stop those lies. They will misrepresent everything that Trump has done. Everything. They will lie. I mean, don't be at all surprised if you start hearing the children locked up on the border thing again. Children separated from their families, even though that's been debunked time and time and time again. That it was an Obama policy. Actually, Trump ended it. Don't be surprised if you hear all of the stuff, all of the nastiness come back up again. I'm already seeing memes talking about pedophilia. I'm already seeing things coming up which are just vile. And absolutely none of it can be substantiated. Absolutely none of it has been backed up with any kind of legal documentation. It's just claims. It's just accusations. There's all kinds of vile nastiness waiting to be dumped on us between now and Election Day. And trust me, it's all lies. It's all misrepresentations. So just be prepared. You're going to be bombarded between now and November with so much garbage that you're going to wish that you lived in a little cabin in the woods with no internet, no television or anything, because you just don't want to be subjected to all of it. And that is pretty much the plan. The left intends to disgust you so much that you are willing to vote for anybody else rather than to put up with all of this garbage for 4 more years. In fact, I fully expect to hear at some point between now and November some political hack to stand in front. I expect this to happen. To look into a camera or look into a host on a television news program, a talking head show, and ask them and say, look at this record of all of these insert lies here. Look at this record of all of these things and ask yourself, do you really want 4 more years of this? Trust me, that will happen at least once, probably many times, between now and Election Day. Because what they want to do is to wear you down. They want you so disgusted and so angry. They want you so fed up that you will vote for a man who has a track record of lying, of stealing other people's works, of harming the memory of innocent people, of blaming others for things that were caused by members of his family. He will defend his family. This person has defended his family in their criminal activity, has denied it when the appearance is overwhelming that they were involved in criminal activity. And between now and November, it's just going to get nastier and nastier. That's what I'm saying. So it's probably wise to go ahead and make up your mind now just to ignore everything you hear between now and then. And pretend you're living in that cabin in the woods with no internet and no television. And just remember the truth when it's time to walk in and cast your vote in November. More after the break when the Daily Perspective continues. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective podcast for a Thursday. This one, the 13th of August, 2020. Great to have you along. I really appreciate the fact that you're listening and that you make this part of your day and you're sharing it with your friends, growing the family. Thank you so much. It is, where was I? I was scanning through my stories here. I got myself all shuffled up. Let me go back to this one before we get into the goofiness of the day. You know, I love me some Just Facts Daily. JustFactsDaily.com is the website, and I share it on social media on a regular basis. And from time to time, I'll pull one to share here. And this one popped up this morning, and I thought, wow, this is one I got to share. And here it is. It's the question of the day. Does federal law prohibit immigration of people who are likely to become a public charge or burden to U.S. taxpayers? Once again, the question is, does federal law prohibit immigration of people who are likely to become a public charge or a burden to U.S. taxpayers? Your choices are yes or no. Yes or no. Does federal law prohibit the immigration of people who are likely to become a public charge or a burden to U.S. taxpayers? The correct answer is yes. U.S. Code Title 8, Chapter 12, Section 1182, that is, bans the entry of immigrants who are likely at any time to become a public charge or burden to taxpayers. Under guidelines issued by the Clinton administration in 1999 and left in place until 2019, the federal government interpreted this law in a manner that ignored numerous welfare benefits such as Medicaid, food stamps, Head Start, subsidizing housing, and assistance with paying utility bills. In 2019, the Trump administration issued a regulation that considers such welfare benefits when deciding whether to admit immigrants and allow them to become permanent residents. After a series of lawsuits and injunctions by Democrat-appointed judges, higher courts allowed Trump's regulation to become nationally effective in February of 2020. So, the Clinton administration issued guidelines in 1999 that stayed there for 20 years and caused the federal government to basically ignore a lot of welfare benefits. So the left knew the law was in place, knew that U.S. Code Title 8, Chapter 12, Section 1182, banned the entry of immigrants who were likely at any time to become a public charge or burden to the taxpayers. They knew that was the law. But they fudged just so they could allow more immigrants into the country that were probably going to end up on welfare and as a result would vote to continue that welfare gravy train because they lived off of it. And that vote would have to be cast for Democrats. So the Democrats were setting up a voter base. They were doing it for 20 years, and make no mistake about it, that's why they're screaming right now about abolishing ICE and everything else that has to do with immigration. That's why. Because they see that as a voter base. Those people are going to come in, they're going to do everything they can to give them all the freebies they can get, and let them know, hey, it's because of us, the Democrats, that you have this stuff. Keep voting for us. And they're going to build a voter base. out of that. And if that's allowed to happen, just as if they got Puerto Rico or Washington, D.C., statehood, extremely liberal, leftist places that would vote Democrat, lockstep. If either of those things happened, you would never see another conservative government in America. And the Barack Obama dream would actually happen.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
And that's what this is all about. Remember, I've told you in the past that the Democrat goal is to destroy capitalism, to destroy our Constitution, and to set up a form of government, which is what they would love to label as democratic socialism. But democratic socialism is a lie, just like socialism is a lie. You get to vote it in happily, yay, and then you can never get rid of it. Just look at Venezuela. All right, on to a different thing. I've been looking through stories, and over at HermanCain.com, Robert Lawry writes a story where he's talking about something that, well, I think that you and I probably agree on, and in part that is that Joe Biden isn't really running for president, not really anyway. Here's what he said. Sure, his name is at the top of the ticket, but he's not the actual candidate. If in November you go into the voting booth and pull the Biden lever, you'll be voting for someone else. People can argue about who that person is. Perhaps it's the machine behind the Obama-Jared alliance. More likely, it's a shady consortium of left-wing donors. Whoever it is, it's not Joe. Joe is an empty, hollowed-out shell of a human being who's never had a single original thought despite being in politics since 1973. Some have argued that you're really voting for his running mate, since Biden won't be able to complete a four-week term, let alone 4 years. I disagree. If you need proof of that, look no further than his running mate, Kamala Harris. She's in. Gretchen Whitmer is out. And the choice was most likely not his to make. According to David Axelrod, if he'd had his druthers, Michigan might have been rid of its capricious, out-of-control governor. He says, quote, others Biden considered may have fit more comfortably into partnership with him. He reportedly clicked well with Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, but she would not have fulfilled the desire of those who prioritize a candidate of color. Whitmer, a white moderate pick, moderate, would also have raised questions among supporters of progressive champion Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren, widely viewed after a lifetime of advocacy and a strong champion for president as a tough, brilliant, and capable policymaker. But some also saw Warren as the most polarizing of the potential candidates, who would have been offered by Trump as evidence that the moderate Biden is merely a Trojan horse for the left. More comfortably is a severe understatement. Harris has a lot of baggage, and you can rest assured we'll get into all of it in the coming days. Whether it's her nightmare tenure as an authoritarian prosecutor, her disastrous performance in the primaries, the fact that she believes Joe Biden's sexual assault accuser of her family history or her family history with slavery, she's not exactly what unbiased observers would call a do-no-harm pick. She's going to have to answer some very difficult questions, and she brings a surprising amount of negatives to the table. Perhaps that's why the DNC powers that be gave Crazy Uncle Joe a script to read when he decided to give Harris the nod. Oh, it was a sheet of paper seen under the phone that caught people's attention. The text reads, I've decided I'd like you to join in this effort to win back the soul of our country and be our nation's next vice president. I think you're entitled to know why I chose you. There are three reasons. Biden was soon mocked in pro-President Trump's social media for resorting to a script during his call with his newly minted running mate. Sean Davis, the co-founder of conservative online mag The Federalist, wrote, Biden's staff had to write a script for him so he'd know why he was even talking to Kamala Harris. I'm calling you today because... Benny Johnson, he's the chief creative officer of the conservative nonprofit Turning Point USA, also took a swipe saying three very important things about this photo of Joe Biden calling Kamala to offer her the VP spot. One, Biden has to read from a script that's clearly visible. Two, Biden doesn't know how to hold an iPhone. It's upside down. And three, the cartoon on Biden's desk is a man screaming, "Why me?" What does it say when your candidate can't even do, he can't even ad-lib this supposedly celebratory reveal? The simple fact is this. Anyone who thinks this was actually Joe Biden's decision is either insane, Joe Biden, or both. Harris's selection is party politics through and through. She, like the former vice president, will be a puppet who dances for the power behind the scenes. Her image will be rehabbed, her positions will belong to someone else, and she, like the presidential candidate, will do as she is told. And this is what I've been saying. If you've been listening lately, this is what I've been saying. But Joe isn't running Joe's show. It's being run by people in the background. Remember Valerie Jarrett? I always thought Valerie Jarrett was always around because she was the script keeper. She was the one in the wings giving Barack Obama his lines from time to time. The same thing's going to happen with Joe Biden if he's elected. And dear God, I hope he isn't. Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here. I got the keys to the big bus and we're driving all over the place. Now when the parents find out, they're really not going to be happy. Hey, I want to play you something that has been popping up on social media over the last 24 hours. And you may have seen it. Maybe not. But I think it's pertinent. It's extremely pertinent in today's political climate, and with what's going on as far as COVID-19, the coronavirus, and the like. And I saw this. I saw it several times, and I finally clicked on it in one of the tweets from Larry the Cable Guy, the comic. And he posted online, and I said, all right, let me see what this guy's got to say. And this, when I did that, is what I heard.
When I hear things like it's not worth the risk, first of all, as a coach, I have had the opportunity to watch this football team at Bedford prepare for this year. And we told them, you know, if you wear your mask, you social distance at meetings, you know, split your time in the weight room. They've done all those things. We said, if you follow these protocols, you will have the opportunity to play. To now come back to them and say, you've done everything right, but you know what? We still don't have the will to let that happen. And I think back to those words, it's not worth the risk. We know, most of us up here have either played or been a part of athletics. We understand that there's inherent risk to what we do. That's why there's an ambulance that sits out by the football fields on Friday night. We know that there is risk. But always that risk-benefit-reward ratio has always been left up to the families to determine, is this worth the physical risk? Well, I don't see any difference in that now. And quite frankly, the governor has himself said when he was out in a protest in the streets of Harrisburg, he said when asked, did you follow your own protocols? He goes, no, I didn't, because I felt the cause was worth the risk.
Wow.
Well, we cannot just allow one person in Pennsylvania to discern for everyone which causes are worth the risk and which are not. That decision needs to be left up to parents, and it needs to be left up to families. Is it worth the risk? I believe that in my case it is. Maybe some other people don't. But at the end of the day, if we're going to leave that decision only up to one person, then we have a problem that's far greater than COVID-19.
That's Pennsylvania State Representative Jesse Topper. He's talking about the Big Ten deciding that they're not going to play football this year. And that somebody, a single person, made this decision. All of these athletes have put in all of this dedicated time. They've been following the rules. They've been doing what they've been told, because they were told that if they would do the following things, we'll be playing this year. And then somebody outside of the program made a decision saying, no, you can't. No, you can't. And he puts it very well. We know there's an element of risk involved. That's why there's an ambulance every Friday night at the games, or every, you know, outside every game, there's an ambulance there. So there's always risk. That's something that not only the athletes, but their parents take into consideration. And they accept the risk. And they accepted the risk of COVID-19 and followed the protocol and were still denied the privilege, still denied the chance to play. Because some politician, some bureaucrat, decided what they felt was important was not important. And that same bureaucrat marched with anti-American protesters. And that's what COVID-19 and coronavirus, by the way, is being used for. It's being used to tear chunks out of the fabric of our nation. Just watch what politicians are doing with it. Just watch. Back to Madame Punctuation, Kamala Harris. On Tuesday, it was the New York Times flat out lying by calling vice presidential candidate Kamala Harris a pragmatic moderate. On Wednesday, yesterday, the Associated Press hyped the Baptist roots of the abortion-loving far-left Democrat. This is coming to us from our friends over at Newsbusters. It wasn't until the final paragraph of the story by Ilana Shore that abortion even came up. And at that point, only gently. The headline touted, "Harris brings Baptist interfaith roots to Democratic ticket." The Liberal Democrats' American Conservative Union lifetime score is 3.03. Yet Shore insisted Harris brings Baptist interfaith roots to the Democratic ticket. She opened the article with this. Kamala Harris, tapped on Tuesday as Joe Biden's running mate, attended services at both a Black Baptist church and a Hindu temple growing up, an interfaith background that reflects her historic status as the first Black woman and woman of South Asian descent on a major party presidential ticket. The 55-year-old first-term Democratic senator, whose name means lotus in the Sanskrit language, identifies as a Baptist as an adult and brought another faith into her life in 2014 when she married Douglas Emhoff, a Jewish attorney. Over and over, the article tells of Harris's religiosity. Quote, "Harris attends services at the Third Baptist Church of San Francisco," end quote. The article quotes Pastor Reverend Amos Brown as declaring, "She's a spiritual person." Here's what the president of the Susan B. Anthony list said of Harris. Kamala Harris, oh, forgive me, I'm not a racist, I promise. Kamala Harris is an extremist who supports abortion on demand through birth, paid for by taxpayers, and even infanticide, an agenda rejected by the overwhelming majority of Americans, including millions of independents and rank-and-file Democrats. As Attorney General of California, Harris conspired with the abortion industry to launch a politically motivated shakedown of brave citizen journalists who exposed Planned Parenthood's role in the harvest and sale of aborted baby parts for profit. Those are the words of the Susan B. Anthony List president, Marjorie Dannenfelser, from a statement. In 2019, Kamala Harris declared that states should be forcibly stopped from enacting any abortion restrictions. Yet it wasn't until the very last sentence that the Associated Press's Shore noted, "Harris's support for abortion rights also sparked criticism from Priests for Life, an anti-abortion group led by a Catholic priest and longtime backer of President Donald Trump." You see, she had to make it about Trump. While discussing the Democrats' faith, journalists should also ask how this squares with an extreme radical support for abortion. Additionally, Harris previously claimed she believes unwanted sexual touching accusations against Biden and thinks that Tara Reid, who accused Biden of sexual assault, has a right to tell her story. Yet she's on his presidential ticket. When will the press ask about that? I can answer that question. Never. They won't ask about that. It's inconvenient. They will shape that into, well, she just said she has a right to tell her story. She didn't say she agreed with her. She's being political. And she is a real politician. She will say whatever she has to say to sway the vote. Depends on who she's talking to. The truth depends on her audience. And that is a real politician, a leftist. There's so much more. There's so much more. As for her Baptist faith, let me guarantee you something. A person of faith, a real person of faith, wouldn't be defined by their pastor as a spiritual person. And the pastor of a real person of faith would hold that person to accountability when it comes to what they profess to believe and then what they do. A real pastor, that person's job as in the role of the pastor is to nurture and guide those who are under his care. And part of that guidance involves some tough love. And that tough love sometimes requires a pastor to say, you can't associate with this body anymore. Because you defend this horrific thing in our society. You defend and promote this horrific thing in our society. You turn a blind eye to the wrongdoing in this sector and that, and this sector and that. You seek their votes, but you don't tell them why they're suffering. In fact, you seek to deepen their suffering by giving them what they want. A real pastor, a real man of God, would sit her down and tell her, this is the truth, and you must align with it, or you cannot associate with this body anymore, and claim that you believe. It's part of the hard work that has to be done from time to time. Kamala Harris may see herself as a spiritual person, but she is not a woman of faith. She is a politician who is pandering. And as part of that pandering, she talks about religion and has others talk about her religion. And those who don't really know will just accept whatever she has to say or others around her have to say about her faith and being a spiritual person. Kamala Harris is a fraud. She is a political chameleon who will say and do anything and everything to get what she wants. And what she wants is political power. And sadly, if she actually does wind up on the winning side of this, she won't be the one in power. There will be people behind her telling her everything she says and does. And we're back. It's the final segment for this Thursday, the 13th of August. A couple of things to deal with here real quick. You know, I think I'll toss that one aside. Earlier this morning when I was scanning social media and looking through my news sources and checking my email and letting the fog clear, because that happens, I got to be honest with you. I have to have, when I get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning, I get up about 5, and I have to have coffee. I'm not even conversational until that first cup of coffee. And you can ask my wife, and she'll be over there chattering about something, and I'll finally look at her and say, "Are you talking?" I have to get everything rolling, and then I can carry on a conversation. And even at that, early in the morning, my responses are like, "Mm-hmm, yeah, no, I don't know, oh no, not no, I don't think so." I mean, it's just I don't really carry on a conversation. I'm not up to speed really until about time to get started with what we're doing here. And to be honest with you, that usually starts dialing up, the coffee's kicking in, and I start getting my brain starts percolating and stuff, and it's usually in the shower. I mean, it's just, I'm waking up, I'm starting to fire on all cylinders, all right, let's go, and I'm ready to go. But bless her heart, she just talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and talks. And the other morning, she actually got mad at me because she was talking to me about something, and I finally just took my iPad and I said, "Oh, fine, what are you saying now?" Because I'm focused on something else, and I'm not in communication mode. I'm just not there. But she keeps talking to me, and and I can't focus on what I'm trying to focus on. And she got mad at me. And I'm like, well, all right, there we are. Anyway, so this morning I am in that mode. I'm scanning through everything, and I'm on social media, and I bump across a post from my friend Joel, who lives in Hawaii. And he was talking in this post about, let me see if I can find it. Hold on a second here. He was referring to being out to, let me see, hang on. I want to make sure I get this exactly right. Okay. Because he's trying to get back in form again, right? He's trying to get dialed back up because everybody's been in lockdown, right? And Joel's a marathon runner. He enjoys this process. I can't imagine enjoying that. I think it's a certain kind of sickness, and I think really there should be a 12-step program, but they'd turn it into a running program. He says, "I walked in the heart of Waikiki tonight for the first time since the quarantine started. The beach was so empty and so many places closed, boarded up, or outright vacated. The governor and mayor have offered no game plans to start up our economic engine. Just stay home, wear a mask, live in fear." And I think that's typical of all of these Democrat-run states. There's no game plan to start up the economic engine. They don't want to start the economic engine. They want it to fail. They want this suffering. This sounds really horrible to you, I know, but it is what they want, because they want to be able to blame the economic downturn on President Trump, and they're already doing it. Already. Kamala Harris, I saw the video last night. She's already in her speaking. She already speaking to crowds is blaming the president for the economic downturn, for the troubles with the economy. She's blaming him. When in fact, what's happening is that the 15 days to flatten the curve has turned into months and months of killing our economy. And that's what's going on. Well, there was a link. I won't name the person who commented, but they posted a link to conservative news or conservativereview.com and an article written by Daniel Horowitz. And here's what that article says. "Based on geography, seasonality, and latitude, when it's your turn to get the virus, you will get it. You can't place a tarp, a mask, or a lockdown in front of a virus the same way you can't arrest the movement of a hurricane. You must deal with it in a healthy and functioning society. You must deal with it with a healthy and functioning society. That is the enduring lesson of what we're seeing throughout the world, where there is zero correlation between human input and the trend of the virus. Hawaii is the latest example of this phenomenon. Hawaii might possibly have the strictest lockdown and mask mandates in the country. It is essentially as strict as the Philippines, though without the threat of being shot by police. However, the state has jailed people for violating lockdown orders, while releasing 38% of all its real criminals in jail. Tourism has been non-existent, and all remaining visitors were told to quarantine. There has been a mandate in place requiring mask wearing indoors since April, and now even outdoors for the past month, even while jogging. The result? Cases are surging now more than ever. Just like in the Philippines, Hong Kong, Israel, Australia, that is, and every southern latitude area with a strict mask mandate and lockdown. If mask mandates were ever going to work to stop a spread, it would have occurred in Hawaii, which is isolated from the rest of the world on all sides. In fact, the exact opposite has happened. Keep in mind, the state's testing rate is still low. They're testing 131,000 per million population versus over 202,000 per million national average. Testing has increased somewhat, as in all states, but even when you adjust cases to test levels of April 8th, today's numbers are still 55% higher and rising fast. Well, maybe people aren't listening and are gathering too much. Not a chance. Hawaii's mobility score of shoppers and travelers has essentially remained flat at unprecedented low levels. There never has been a true reopening, yet cases are surging. The state's mobility score is much lower than the U.S. average. And there are charts, by the way, there are graphs and everything, and I want you to get this in the show notes today at dailyperspectivepodcast.com so you can actually see the graphs and the charts. You can't see them here, can you? No. Like most other countries that engaged in heavy-handed police state tactics, Hawaiians have nothing to show for their lockdown but a crushed economy and lives lost. Sure, they still have a low death rate, but that has nothing to do with stopping the spread with mandates. The spread was not stopped. The low death rate is likely driven by the same theory behind the low death rates in all Pacific Rim countries. They have a high rate of cross immunity from persistent coronavirus colds. The same dynamic is unfolding in New Zealand. The country has been in a perpetual state of lockdown since March at an unfathomably painful cost. Now they have discovered a new cluster of community spread. Where did it come from? The virus does what the virus does. The only question is whether you will destroy your country while it does what it does. Just take London and Stockholm, for example, as a tale of two diverging cities. The former has had a strict lockdown to this very day, while Stockholm eschewed any mandatory lockdown and masking policies. According to research published in the Journal of the Royal Society of Medicine, they both have about 17% seroprevalence among their respective populations. As the BBC observes, experts predicted 40% of people in Stockholm would have antibodies. But as noted before, because of inherent T-cell immunity to virus, the virus appears to stop before that benchmark. Everyone will have to achieve herd immunity, but that threshold is much lower for this virus. The big difference, however, is that Sweden achieved this without destroying its country, while England suffered a 20% drop in GDP this past quarter. That translates into tens of thousands of additional lives lost from despair, stress, substance abuse, and suicide. All these countries that thought they dodged a bullet by locking down earlier than the UK, such as the other Nordic countries, are now at risk for future waves of the virus. There's already evidence the virus is spreading in all the Nordic countries, except for Sweden. Sweden, with its northern climate, is not known for sunshine, but life looks a lot sunnier there than anywhere else, especially in the tourist haven of Hawaii. Well, the former tourist haven. Hawaii crushed its tourism industry with mandatory quarantines backed by the threat of criminal prosecution. Now they have 22.6% unemployment, the second highest rate in the United States, with nothing to show for it but surging cases and hundreds of criminals roaming the streets. And this is the result of life under a progressive government. Hawaii, whose economy is built on tourism, shut tourism down and their economy is dying. They let prisoners go to keep them from being infected, and then criminalized normal, rational, legal human behavior. This is what you get when you elect progressives. And that's all for today. Should be enough, I think. Have a good day. Let's get back together tomorrow for the Friday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. We'll see you then. God bless. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.